An aerial view of woodlands, trees with green, yellow and russet leaves. Showtime presents Bonnie Bedelia, Bruce Davison. An American eagle with white head and tail feathers soars above the ground, its black wings spread wide. Locked in Silence, based on a true story. A boy with a red baseball cap clamped over his fair, wavy hair and standing on the back of a pickup truck imitates the bird by spreading out his arms. Mark Donato, Bill Switzer, Stephen McCarthy, Helen Hughes. The driver calls out to the boy.
Hey, Stephen, sit down! John, I told you to keep a handle on your brother. Now get down, now!
Stephen, get down! Dad, get out the belt!
Stephen responds glumly to his older brother, John. In the cab, another brother.
You know, Dad, I still got weekends for you. I mean, if you need me to help out, I
can... We'll manage. You just do good work.
A car moves up behind the pickup truck. John lays down the magazine he's reading, stands up and drops his pants at the impatient driver behind. Stephen laughs and the driver overtakes.
What's his problem?
John waves his cap in the air. More titles. Ron White and Dan Hedaya as Dr. Rosenstock. The pickup drives into a town. Casting by Beth Klein, Claire Walker, CDC. Music by Gary Chang. Edited by Gordon McClellan. Production designer, Rolf Harvey. Director of photography, Michael Storey. The father, Jim, gets out of the pickup.
Let's go.
Where ain't going?
You ain't going?
I ain't going, sir.
I'm going.
Come on, Dad, it's my pair.
Stop.
Dad, Daddy, me too.
Come on, partner, get on there. Come on, let's go do that shopping for Mom.
In the barbershop.
Morning, Jim.
Albert, Carmine.
You cut it short.
Dad, give me a break. You said a trim.
I'm giving you all the breaks you're going to get now. You have another detention, I'll shave you bald.
You gotta nip them in the bud before they get out of hand, Jim.
Wondering you too, Eli.
Eli's the town sheriff.
How about another tour of the jailhouse, John?
Cut it off.
The pickup drives along a dirt road out in the country and makes a right turn up to a homestead, passing a red barn and a cylindrical silo beside it. Executive producer David A. Simons. Story by David A. Simons. Screenplay by Deline Young. Directed by Bruce Pittman. A woman in a checked lumberjacket is painting a peach-coloured window frame on the red brick three-story homestead. Stephen runs up to her.
John's got porcupine here again, Mom.
That's okay. Porcupines are cool. Let's see, John.
Give me that. Why don't you go do your chores?
Jamie, the eldest brother, slopes off.
When I get older, I'm growing my hair down past my butt.
You baking bread, Mom?
Uh-huh, that's good.
John, go help your brother. Now.
John, sporting his new cropped haircut, shuffles across the porch. Stephen opens a wooden slatted gate under the porch and shuts himself in.
What do you think?
They both inspect her paintwork. From under the porch, Stephen looks out at his father.
Well?
I thought it would freshen things up a bit.
She waits expectantly. Jim nods, then something catches his eye.
John, get off the bike and help your brother!
Okay!
I never thought I'd be living in a peach house.
There's a dog under the porch with Stephen. Stephen opens a box, inside which sits a model aeroplane. Stephen reaches under the plane for a big book. He takes it out and dusts it down.
I'm going to Grant's house.
He strokes the dog's head. He runs across a field where half of the crop has been harvested. Later, he sits on a rocking chair on a porch with a white-haired woman.
Never. There ever been such a monster in all of Greece?
In all the world. Smoke and fire oozed out of him.
That's
but
right.
But he wasn't afraid.
No, because he had his sword and his wits. Even though that dragon towered over Jason, He didn't hesitate. He just drew out his sword. And after a fearsome battle, he slew the dragon and got the golden fleece.
He enacts the tale.
Oh, honey.
They hug. At home, he's at the table.
Thank you, Mom.
Want some more gravy? Hey, look. Ma gave me blood and guts for dinner.
Want me to put that back in?
You know, just once, I would like to hear a thank you mother around here.
But I did.
Alan and his dad are driving down to the college on Sunday. They said I could hitch a ride with them if that's okay.
Does that mean you're going to stay there and sleep over?
Mm-hmm. It's a dorm.
Their team sucks.
He's going there to work, not to play.
Do you want me to put yours back, too?
If he wants, he'll ask. Just eat up.
Yes, sir.
Lydia, I need you to help me out at the office.
What do you mean?
Well, I had to let Mrs. Warren go.
You're kidding. Why?
Can't afford her.
You mean full time?
That's temporary.
What about Steven?
I ain't hanging out with him. I got detention.
Well, you keep hanging out with Josh Samuels, you'll be back in nursery school.
Who's going to pick Steven up at school?
Well, he could take the bus.
It's an hour each way.
Oh, come on, how come he's such a chicken?
But one more word out of you, and you'll be in my detention all week. You want that?
John glares at his father.
I took the bus.
Stephen's eyes flit from one parent to the other. Lydia heaves a resigned sigh. John's on a horse in a corral. Stephen comes out to Jamie on the porch.
How come you have to live at school?
Hey, it's not forever.
Will you call me?
Of course I will. Hey.
He reaches in his pocket.
Listen, get something for your bus ride, all right? Well, I guess I better start packing.
You're all packed. I'll do it this afternoon.
Mind if I check it, Mom?
Jamie, be my guest.
Stephen hides the money in his box under the porch.
Could you like coming to town?
Why?
Well, you know, it's not Chicago, but it's the best we got.
Mm, not even close.
And all these years, you're still pining away for skyscrapers and sirens and all that.
In the blood.
Seems so. Never thought a kid of mine'd be smart enough for college. Takes after you. Well, you could bring a touch of sophistication to the office, right? You know? You got no choice. College ain't cheap.
Willie Burns offered to buy that acreage.
Lydia, how many times have I told you we're not selling off any more land, and I sure as hell am not selling to Burns?
Please, don't fight.
All my family buried out there.
I really hate it when you say that. Makes it sound like we're all living in a 100-acre cemetery.
Just want to have something to give my sons. I keep hoping one of them will. I mean, James isn't interested.
Maybe John.
Yeah, well, if he doesn't break his neck before high school.
Me, Dad. Daddy, me.
Stephen looks up to the wooden floorboards of the porch with his puppy dog eyes. Evening. Lydia is playing chess with her youngest son across the board. She toys with one of the pieces. Stephen smiles at her.
You smell like chocolate.
What are you, a detective? I made brownies for your lunch tomorrow.
Jim next door overhears.
So are you ready for your big adventure on the bus?
The boy rubs his throat.
You okay, honey?
What if something happens on the bus?
Anything happens, all you have to do is call my name. So I can hear your thoughts no matter how far away you are. I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking that Jamie's not going to know you when he comes back from school. He's going to walk in, he's going to go, who's that quiet little boy over there in the corner? Am I right?
Stephen smiles again, then stands to move a chess piece.
Check.
How'd you do that?
Magic. Just like you. I knew exactly what you're thinking.
Jim watches from the table on which he's working. A yellow school bus with Charter on its indicator panel sits outside a school. Students brush past Stephen.
What's in the bag? Huh? Shrimp? Huh? Klein ball? Why do you always let them push you around? Wait up!
Stephen makes no attempt to board.
Hey, Klein.
He waits to the end of the line. Then, head down, he climbs on board. The first of the kids who teased him notices him stroll down the aisle. Stephen tries to look at no one. He passes the girl who was nice to him. The bully grabs the paper bag Stephen's carrying.
Yes! Thanks for the candy, booger boy.
Hey, give me some of that.
The girl shoves past Stephen and grabs the bag.
Why don't you just stay out of it, Beth Ann?
Knock it off!
Beth Ann returns to her seat. Stephen sits beside her, and she returns his candy. The bus doors close. On a beautiful sunny afternoon, the bus stops, and Stephen makes his way down the steps onto the tree-lined road. Stephen inspects his candies, and Beth Ann leans out of a window. He stands at the roadside looking after the departing bus, hauls out one of the lengths of orange chewy candy and takes a bite. He runs along a path cut through wild grass. He walks through another field, then skips into a wood with a carpet of leaves underfoot. He stands by a creek and sees a body lying in it.
Mom?
His brother John is across the creek, hiding behind a tree.
Mommy.
Mom! Mommy! Mom, I'm after me!
He drops his cap as he races home. John rubs his forehead and chases after him.
Mom! Mommy!
The young boy runs into the house, passing the pumpkins and flowers on the porch. Inside, he looks out of a window, his hands pressed against the glass. He runs onto the porch, then back inside. From an upstairs balcony, he sees his brother. John sprints into the house and grabs his little brother by the shoulders. He holds Stephen by the head and crouches down so they are face to face. He speaks to Stephen. Lydia and Jim turn onto the track up to the house in their green coupe. The two boys are out on the balcony watching as their parents arrive home. The two boys lean on the balcony balustrade and watch as Lydia, then Jim, climb out of the car. Their heads turn when they see the sheriff's car head for the house. The boys scurry inside. Their parents stand looking at the sheriff's car.
What the hell's Eli want?
The sheriff and the deputy, both in uniform, get out. The sheriff puts on his hat.
Eli?
Afternoon, folks.
What's up?
Well, I'm afraid I got some bad news. Know little Josh Samuels?
Yeah?
Found his body this afternoon in the creek down in the ravine.
Oh, God. What happened?
Well, we don't know. I would like to ask your boy John a few questions if I could.
Why?
Well, they were friends, Jim.
Oh, God.
Now, John, I'd like you to think before you answer me.
John's come outside.
Is this your cap?
The sheriff holds out Stephen's red cap. Stephen watches from inside the house.
You know who this cap belongs to? Is it yours?
John stares ahead. His lips are tightly shut. Stephen watches.
Now, I found this cap by the ravine. Now, it's possible somebody might have pushed him over the edge into the river.
What are you asking him?
Now, these boys have been nothing but trouble for some time. And he had a run-in with them a couple of weeks ago, didn't you, John?
Yes, sir, I did.
Now, I'm hoping you can tell me this isn't your cat.
It's mine.
Stephen's come onto the porch.
You sure of that?
Yes, sir.
What are you saying? You think my boy's had something to do with this?
Doing my work, Jim. Were you up the ravine today?
Stephen?
Stephen nods his head.
You see anybody else up there?
No.
Well, most likely it was an accident. Boy's probably just horsing around, took a nasty fall.
Most likely. But you give our condolences to the Samuels.
Will do. Sort of trouble you.
The sheriff walks back to the car where his deputy's waiting. They both get in.
Could have been Stephen.
Jim, smartly dressed in suit, shirt and tie, turns to John.
You know anything about this?
No.
John comes in.
Talking to anybody about this, all right? It's none of their business, you understand?
But...
Shut up. It's all you need to do is keep your mouth closed.
John takes his hand from his brother's mouth and walks out of the room.
The Hoosier Heritage Fall Tour.
The television's on in the living room.
Spotlighting our county. On a more serious note, foul play has thus far been ruled out in the death of 13-year-old Josh Samuels. Samuels was found dead in a ravine off County Road 22. He is the second student in the Washburn District to have died accidentally this year. Sheriff Eli Haynes has promised to begin patrols of the ravine and surrounding area as it has become more dangerous due to recent rains.
Upstairs, Stephen's asleep.
Stephen.
Shut up, Stephen.
You know who this cat belongs to.
Keep it close.
Charges have been pending against a man who allegedly entered a Bolton area.
Stephen comes downstairs, clutching his throat.
Miss Phil?
Jim and Lydia rush over to him.
What's the matter?
Oh, he's burning up.
Here, let me see.
In a hospital bed.
You just have a little bit at a time. It'll feel so cool.
Sore, huh? Yeah, I know. I had my tonsils out when I was very little. Remember, I woke up from the operation, my mom asked me what flavor ice cream I wanted. I said strawberry.
He writes something down.
Of course, that was in the days when they made strawberry ice cream with real strawberries. Stay here? What, you mean forever? Do you want to go home? No?
Pouting, he shakes his head. The bully accosts him outside school.
My dad was talking to Josh's dad. He said your brother John had something to do with it. Come on, talk, shrimp.
Josh's head was smashed and his brains was oozing out.
Yeah, they were popping out.
Stephen stares at him through glazed eyes.
You don't scare me. Who needs you?
Beth Ann watches impressed. In the bus, she leans over to his seat.
That was so awesome. It's like that story about these supernatural kids with glowing yellow eyes. They had a power. Their mouth was in their eyes or something. They didn't talk. They just made people do things. All with their eyes. I wish I had supernatural eyes.
Stephen grins and looks up at the girl. A bird flies overhead as the bus sets off. At home, Stephen stands in front of a mirror and puts his fingers to his eyes. He tries eyes wide, then narrowed, practicing his supernatural stare. John stands by the creek where Josh's body was found. His cap pulled down over his short hair, he brings a cigarette in his right hand up to his mouth. With his left hand, he takes it out, blows out the smoke and walks away.
Stephen?
Lydia comes out and sits on the porch steps.
Knock.
From under the porch, he places toy soldiers on a step.
Did your throat hurt? The doctor took away your tonsils. He didn't take away your voice.
I was wondering what you sound like now.
Know what I was thinking?
I was thinking that maybe your voice got real deep and you sound like Jamie now.
Think? Maybe? Let's hear something. Anything. It's been a while.
Stephen crawls away further under the port, out of her sight. She sighs and stares ahead. In a doctor's surgery...
Say, ah, that's it. Open up a little more, a little more. Okay. Thanks, Stephen. You're out of here.
Stephen holds his throat. The doctor looks at Lydia.
There's nothing wrong with his throat. Might be something for attention. I think it's all in Stephen's head.
Really? Thank you.
In class.
Intransigent. Now, Stephen, tell us what it means.
Arms folded, he stomps his feet.
Stubborn. He says it means stubborn. Excellent. You may sit down, Stephen.
He points to himself, folds his arms, and stomps his feet.
Stephen.
He's being intransigent.
Stephen bows.
Sit down.
He smiles. At home, Lydia's ironing when John bustles inside.
Where's your brother?
Ignoring her, John heads straight for the fridge.
John? Where's Stephen? I'm talking to the wall. John? Has Stephen spoken to you?
Nope.
He stomps away.
Not that anyone has a real conversation around here.
Jim in the next room overhears.
Any conversation around here?
He goes to the stairs.
Stephen!
Stephen rolls off his bed and places the newspaper cuttings he was looking at in a dresser drawer. Downstairs, John watches wrestling on TV.
Stephen!
The boy's on the landing.
Now, I'm not asking you. I'm not begging you. I am telling you. I want you to stop this game now.
It's not a game, Dad.
You keep out of this! You understand what I'm saying? Look, just... Hey, don't walk away from me!
Let it go, Jim.
Let it go. Well, since when is it all right for him to slam a door in my face and walk away?
He can't talk.
How do you know he can't talk? Everybody just gives in to whatever he does. What?
Stephen's come downstairs.
You got something to say, say it.
Jim.
What, you want to hear your little boy's voice? You want to hear him howl? I'll have him howling at the moon in a minute.
Jamie arrives home. Stephen runs to him.
Home sweet home. Happy Thanksgiving.
Jamie has Stephen in his arms. John stares at his mum, then his brothers, and relaxes.
You're going to church, John? You're changing your clothes. In the bag.
Day, the Klein family are back from a shopping trip. Grandma's visiting.
Your mom is Turkish. Sure smells good.
Hey, Stevie. Listen, I got that book you asked for, the one you wrote me about. But first, okay, why do you want to learn sign language?
Stephen shrugs.
It's not an answer.
Stop picking on him.
Listen, Stephen, if you know you're happy not to talk for now, then what? Listen, all right? Listen, if it's fun for a while, then I won't ask you to do it.
Stephen clasps his hands together.
What is that? Promise? Okay, fine. I promise. Listen, it's for deaf people, okay? That's not you, get it? And don't let Dad catch you with it, okay? Get out of here.
Hear your mother?
Stephen runs to his secret place under the porch. John sighs, then strolls past his grandma, who stops him.
What makes you so angry, Johnny?
Nothing.
Outside church.
Really good to see you.
Okay. Good to see you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tables are set out with drinks and fruit for Thanksgiving. Stephen's teacher spots Jim, Lydia, and Jamie.
Hello, coach.
Excuse me. A happy Thanksgiving to you all.
Thanks. How are you?
Oh, fine, thank you. Little Stephen certainly is the beau of the ball, isn't he?
He's miming as in a game of charades.
Why, all to Alaska.
John sits on a bale of straw, smoking. Grandma watches Stephen.
The Eskimos? Oh, the Eskimos.
He's got to fight the circus performer here. Excuse me.
License.
Is that who everybody thinks he is?
Stephen mimes climbing a ladder, then holds both arms up. Tears well in John's eyes as he watches. He lowers his head, then raises it when a man stands in front of him.
I saw my son's body. There wasn't no fall he took. He was beat up good.
Josh's father knocks John's cap off.
Wasn't he, John?
John glares up at the unshaven, grey-haired Mr. Samuels, who's wearing a shirt and tie and a flat cap and coat. Mr. Samuels walks away. John shakes his head. Night. Lydia sits up in bed, her head resting on her hands. Another day she's in the car with Stephen.
You don't know. You might have fun. You're going to be the only kid in the whole school that's been hypnotized. It can help bring you back, honey.
He shakes his head and points with both hands to his chest.
No, I mean, bring your voice back. I miss you. This isn't you.
He points to himself and raises his hands head high, about 3 feet apart. He repeats it.
Stephen, you always were special.
He sits looking at her, vigorously shaking his head.
Think of a pendulum swinging back and forth, and you'll feel the urge to sleep. On the count of three, your lids will be so heavy, your eyes will shut. One. Two. Three.
Stephen's eyes are shut. He gulps in air. Air bubbles underwater. A shadowy figure floating on the water surface. Lydia's face appears.
Stephen? Mommy?
I can hear your thoughts.
No.
I can hear your thoughts no matter how far away you are.
No.
Keep your mouth closed.
No.
Stephen's drowning.
No. No.
He wakes from his hypnosis. Lydia's in the waiting room.
Stephen
runs out, flaps his arms, and goes.
What?
Jim is working with a blowtorch. He switches it off and lifts his face mask.
So, how much did this fool cost? You got all these great ideas, and why don't you take John? Maybe you can get hypnotized into not skipping school. What? Hypnotist? Psychiatrist? What's next, voodoo?
Gives me hope.
Well, how are we going to pay for it? I mean, I got all these bills on my desk. He's not helping Stephen.
Sell some land.
Jim turns away from Lydia.
We could. You should have seen him today. Expression on his face, he's sick, Jim.
Well, maybe he's not talking because you're on him about it, night and day.
Am I the only one seeing this? At least before, it's Stephen to talk to.
What, now you got nobody? Is that what you mean?
Grandma's on her porch listening to an old gramophone record.
Dinner's ready, Grand.
You do too much, child.
Yeah. I'm falling apart.
You try and get some rest now.
Wish I could. Sleep and sleep and sleep.
A beautiful autumn day. A church sits at the top of a main street. The hill behind it is a panoply of colour. Greens, purples, yellows and russet. Lydia and Stephen are with a psychiatrist.
I just don't think that we should continue the sessions. I don't see the point.
Stephen, why don't you step out?
He mimes, "You promised."
Stephen, I said go outside, go to the playroom.
He looks at his mum, who nods. He leaves the room.
You know he's still controlling you.
I've been bringing him here week after week, and there's no change. I still can't touch him, and I feel like every time I drag him down here, I lose another piece of him.
There is a doctor whose sole specialty is children. Now, he has his own clinic. It's in a hospital. It's an institution for children.
You're suggesting we put him in an institution? That's ridiculous.
Lydia, it's where he works. Listen, Dr. Rosenstock's specialty is disturbed children, and Stephen's case is right up his alley.
No, he's had enough, and I've had enough. This time I'm going to give him what he wants, and he wants out.
The psychiatrist closes her file as Lydia grabs her coat. Stephen runs across a field, half stubble, the rest with the crop still standing. He spins around, his arms in the air, his face triumphant. From a distance, his mother, standing by the car, watches. The wind ruffles her hair. Wearing Wellington boots, Stephen spins around in the snow, his arms outstretched, the snow settling on the woolen cap covering his head. Snow lies on the ground by the creek. Springtime, Grandma on her porch sniffs a hanging basket in full bloom. Playing beside her on the porch is Stephen, arms outstretched. Autumn, night, and the house door opens. John emerges and opens the outer mosquito net door. John, in his black parka, checks on the upstairs window. Behind him is Stephen in jeans and a denim jacket. Stephen closes the door and follows John down the steps. He, too, glances up.
Hey, get over here. Come on. That cat just will kill us. Doing this for you, Stephen.
They set off in the pickup. Jim's with Grandma.
I love the dark.
You love the dark, do you?
Hey, why don't you get a stepladder?
I need a stepladder.
Jimmy.
Well, why don't you go inside? It's freezing out here.
It's not your fault.
What's not my fault?
Stephen.
Well, whose fault is it? These things don't just happen.
Jim scratches the back of his neck and leans on a pillar.
I don't know. No, I mean, I hated talking to my old man, too. Maybe it's in the blood. I'm no better than he was.
Jim, maybe something's hurting Stephen.
Jim tests the bulb he's replaced on the porch.
I just wish it were that simple.
John's by a tree in open country.
Right, I'll pick you up in an hour.
Stephen's with Beth Ann on the tree.
Did Jamie send you any money? If I had a big brother, I'd make him send me money. My dad says Jamie's a regular guy. Trouble is that regular people are boring, huh? I like irregular people, like you. How come the man in the moon's a man? It's too pretty, huh?
Stephen nods his head.
You know what the best part of being with you is? I can talk to you about anything and you don't get stupid. Usually boys don't interest me, but you interest me. So, what do you think?
She's carved something on a branch.
Yeah, it's kind of great, huh? Sometimes, though, I wouldn't hate it if you, you know.
St- Stephen tentatively moves his right hand towards Beth Ann, then pulls it back before touching her cheek, then leaning forward to kiss it. He nods, closes his eyes, and rests his head on her shoulder. The boys are back at home.
Steal my truck?
Dad, look, I was
just... Get down for five.
What?
Get down!
Dad,
bend over!
No! Stop.
What?
Put your belt back on.
What?
I said put your belt back on. Or I'll go through your closet and I'll get every last one of them and cut them up.
John beats a hasty retreat. Stephen follows him.
You're taking their side against me?
No, I'm not taking anybody's side.
What, are you giving up on them?
No, I just want Stephen back. I just want my family back.
They got you dancing. I mean, Stephen wiggles his fingers, everybody jumps. John might as well be deaf.
Well, John's afraid of you. Stephen won't let me touch him. I can cook his meals and wash his clothes, but if I stand too near him, he freaks out.
In the semi-darkness, Jim stands and studies his distraught wife before turning and walking away. Stephen steps out of his hiding place as his father stomps past and into the pickup. Jim reverses and the headlights catch Stephen in their beam. He covers his eyes. The truck speeds down the track. A few wispy clouds pass over the moon. In the stables, Lydia strokes one of the horses.
What do you want?
In a corner of the stable, smoke rises from a bale. In his bed, Stephen twists and turns, his sleep disturbed. Lydia makes her way across the stable. As she hangs something up, she hears a noise and turns. She walks across to where the smoking bale is now alight. Two gas cylinders are by the blaze. Stephen wakes up, goes to his window, and sees smoke billowing from the stable. As he moves away, the flames reach the cylinders. Lydia steps back from the flames. Stephen runs outside, sees the fire enveloping the stable door, then races back inside for his coat. Lydia runs to the other door. It's barred. Stephen races to the stable. Lydia takes a long-handled axe and attacks the barred door. Stephen stands rooted to the spot as Lydia tries to break out. He mouths "Mum." Lydia splits a strut in the door and uses the axe to lift the wooden bar, locking her in. She opens the doors, then runs back to the horses. Stephen watches open-mouthed as she releases them. The blue pickup drives up to the house and Jim runs over as Lydia races out.
Everybody all right?
Everybody's fine. Where were you?
Oh, my God, the horses.
I got them out. Where the hell were you? Could have died in there.
That to Stephen.
Damn you. Could have died.
Two fire engines drive up and firemen leap into action. Stephen watches as hoses are trained on the burning stable. Later, Lydia is standing on the back porch and Grandma sitting on the steps as John comes out. He walks down the steps, staring across the yard at the stable.
What happened?
As a fireman kicks a smouldering bale, John strolls over to join his father, younger brother, and the sheriff.
What happened?
Well, that's what I'm here for. You didn't have anything to do with this now, did you, John?
What? No, I wasn't even here.
Stephen, you were home. Did you see who did this?
Did you see who did this?
He shakes his head.
Starks hadn't called in the fire boys. This dummy of yours will let this whole place...
Hey, Eli, nobody calls my son a dummy.
Come on.
Sorry, Jim, I'm just a little frustrated. All he had to do was pick up the phone to call for help. This whole place here's kind of gone up in flames.
I realize that.
Lydia and Grandma go indoors.
We're done here.
Jim watches as Lydia shuts the back door, then his eyes return to the stable. Later, in their bedroom...
He's sick, Jim. It's not that he won't talk, he can't. He can't talk.
All right. I'm gonna call the hospital. That Rosenstock guy. Step.
We're not institutionalizing ourselves.
Lydia, what are we supposed to do?
How will we pay for it?
I'll make a phone call to Willie Burns. I'll sell him a parcel of that South End.
Lydia, sitting up under the blankets, reaches out her hand and rubs Jim's arm. He turns to watch her. Stephen's in the car in the yard. Jim comes out of the house.
What'd you tell him?
Well, I told him that we were going to a ball game in Indianapolis. There's a game, but we won't be seeing it. So I'm a liar.
Stephen sits in the back seat, smiling and looking all around at the new scenery. His mum and dad are up front. Lydia staring straight ahead. Stephen's brow furrows as they turn off the highway and motor along a tree-lined drive. They come to a huge red brick building with a dome above the central wing and a colonnaded entranceway. A man in a blue anorak and fawn trousers comes down the steps to meet them as Lydia gets out of the car.
Come on, Stephen.
Mr. and Mrs. Clark. Hello, Stephen.
The man indicates with his arm for them to go up the stairs. Stephen tries to run away. Jim carries the struggling Stephen inside.
Come with me, Stephen.
Stephen covers his ears at the noise. Stephen walks into a room where two men are arm wrestling with an audience of kids.
I'm in trouble.
Oh, I'm in deep trouble.
The man, who looks about to lose, fights hard. Stephen watches from the doorway. The kids are enthusiastic, but one girl looks over to Stephen and smiles.
Where'd they take him?
Jim and Lydia stand in a corridor as a youth is led past by his arm. Back at the arm wrestling, the comeback is complete.
Almost. Maybe tomorrow. Huh?
Yep.
Maybe.
The winner walks over to Stephen, and the man who led the boy in moves away.
Hi, Stephen. I'm Dr. Harvey Rosenstock.
Stephen recoils.
Want to come in? We've got a chair for you.
What a win!
He looks like a munchkin.
Rosenstock leads Stephen to a seat at a large table.
Keep it down. Keep it down.
A woman greets Jim and Lydia.
Mr. and Mrs. Klein, hi. I'm Dr. Beckman, Dr. Rosenstock's associate.
Stephen thumps the table, points a finger at his nose and covers his face.
Jim, Lydia Klein, Dr. Rosenstock.
Oh, nice to see you from here.
Stephen takes his hands away and pulls a face. The girl, sitting two down from him, gets up.
He's going to be fine. Why don't you come to my office? We can talk there.
The girl to Stephen.
What kind of insane are you?
Stephen starts to throw the contents of the table onto the floor, brushing things away with his arm in a tantrum. Later, he runs to a bed. He throws his things around the single room as Dr. Rosenstock comes to the open door. He stands watching the boy. Stephen kicks the wall and slams drawers open and shut. Dr. Rosenstock, a tall, dark-haired man in his 50s and wearing spectacles, walks into the room. Stephen points to himself and the window. The doctor shrugs.
I don't understand what you're trying to say.
Stephen lies face down on the bed.
I have no idea what you're trying to say.
Stephen tosses his pillow aside and lies face down on his arms. The doctor removes his glasses and sits down.
I know you don't want to be here, but you have a problem, Stephen. And you and I, we're going to fix it. And then you're going to go back home to your mommy and daddy and all your friends, and you're going to feel much, much better. And I promise you, you won't stay here one second longer than you have to. You have my word of honor.
Stephen shoos him away. At home...
You put him in a nut house?
He needs help.
Mom, he likes the way he is.
Well, I don't. If it was born that way, I'd accept it, but it wasn't.
He was born not wanting to be touched, I'd accept that, too.
Mom, people like him now. I mean, what else do you want?
I want what's best for him.
Oh, and you think talking is best for him. Look, all it's gonna do is...
What?
Nothing.
What's the matter with you? What are you afraid of?
Nothing. Look, I'm just afraid he's gonna say stupid stuff like you.
John marches out of the house, leaving his exasperated mother. It's for Dr. Rosenstock.
You wanna go home, sleep in your own bed? I'll make you a deal. If you start to show some improvement, I'm gonna write a weekend pass for you real soon. Promise. Did you ever hear of a man named Marcel Marceau? Well, he was a great actor in France. He was a mimist, which meant he does what you do. And thousands of people would come to a theater to see him, and he never said a word except with his hands. He would make a butterfly go up, and he'd give a rose to a pretty girl. And then the show would finish, and he would go home. And you know what he would do? He'd say hi to his wife and his kids. I'm telling you this because I would never want to see you stop miming. But I want you to be able to speak and mime. It's going to take work.
Stephen lowers his head. Later, Dr. Susan Beckman enters Rosenstock's office.
Hey, Harv.
Hi, Susan.
Trisha phoned. She wanted me to remind you that it's her anniversary.
All right, let me get home. Remember, tomorrow, in therapy, under no circumstances, come to Stephen's defense.
I know, Harv.
Don't protect him. I have to isolate him, break his control.
I know, Harv, I know.
I know you know, but I want to tell
you. Good night, Harv.
Wish me luck.
Good luck. Good night. See you tomorrow.
Go on, Stephen, tell him off. Get him. Tell him to shut up.
Can't talk. Get yourself a job at one of the carnival geek shows.
Like, what's your problem?
Oh, my God.
Hey, settle down.
In the therapy class, Dr. Rosenstock offers Stephen a chair. Susan is completely thrown by his intervention and follows him out of the class.
They're trouncing a kid.
Oh, come on, Harv. You're losing your objectivity. I thought we agreed.
I know.
No protection.
I know. I couldn't.
He is not the center of the universe, Harv. Maybe at home where everyone treats him like some...
Susan, you're right. Okay, I just... I know what I have to do. I have to keep peeling away and peeling away.
What if he breaks? Regression, what if he falls?
I'll be there for
him. Hey, guys, sorry I'm late.
The family visits Stephen.
You all right? If you need anything, you tell me, all right?
Stephen stands in front of his dad and nods. Stephen signs to Dr. Rosenstock, pointing to himself and drawing the shape of a house before clasping his hands.
He wants to go home.
It's too early. Stephen and I have an understanding. He knows.
Just for the weekend.
So, how does he earn the right to go home, Doctor? I think we better have this conversation in my office. No, I don't need a college lecture, Doctor. Just tell me, when does he get to go home? I can't tell you. Well, then what are we talking about? Look, if you can't do the job, just send him home.
He's crying, Jim.
Hey, wait up, Stephen. Look, can I go with him?
Stephen!
Stephen heads for the hospital with John following. Jim moves away in Rosenstock's office.
Thinks I'm deserting him.
You're not deserting him.
But he thinks I am. Did you see him?
Yeah, I saw him.
He never cries.
He had an emotional response. It's a good thing.
He's devastated.
It was a breakthrough.
At least before he was happy, he'd adjusted to his situation.
Mrs. Klein, Stephen doesn't have a situation. Okay? Your son is very sick.
Well, I'm not going to sit here and watch him fall apart.
I don't have any authority to keep him here. But I'll tell you something. If you take him home in this condition, you're not going to change. And if you continue to let him manipulate you like this, you're going to cripple him.
You think this is my fault?
She stares wide-eyed at the doctor. In a corridor, Stephen signs to his brother.
Come on, everybody leaves home.
Stephen shakes his head.
As soon as I'm 16, I'm going.
Stephen wags his fingers above his head, then spreads his arms out.
Yeah, I know. I want it to be like that, too. Save the farm, maybe get some more horses and ride. Nothing but ride all day long. But, you know, we can't always do what we want to do.
John turns away from his little brother, who points.
Nothing's wrong. I'm just talking. All you do when you talk is you say a bunch of stuff that doesn't make sense. Stay the way you are, Stephen. It'll be okay. And maybe we'll both run away together.
Another day, Stephen sits on the floor, his face sad. He lowers his head and shakes it. In the stable, John sits alone polishing a saddle.
Hi, Stephen.
Stephen's in the hospital grounds.
I'm feeding the birds. Only there aren't any birds. Who would want to fly around a hospital full of psychos? Rosenstock said if I used a better quality crumb, maybe they'd take a chance on us. Yeah, right.
He joins the girl on a wooden bench.
Your crazy part's only in your throat. That's so cool. You know where mine is?
He shakes his head.
All through me.
The girl, Lacey, with long fair hair and rings through the top of her right ear, hands Stephen some bread. He points a finger to his temple.
Oh, I'm suicidal.
Stephen turns his head away from Lacey and tosses some bread on the ground. There's a tank of tropical fish in Dr. Rosenstock's room. It's directly behind him as he sits facing Stephen.
Did you ever see the inside of a phone before, Stephen? Complicated, huh? Is there anybody you'd like to call?
Stephen lays down the plastic transparent telephone and eagerly writes something down on a pad. He holds the pad up and shows it to the doctor.
Beth Ann. It's a good friend?
Stephen nods.
But I don't know when you can see her again. When you get better. When you start talking again. And then you're gonna call her. Say hi, Beth Ann. I'm all better. I'm coming home.
Images of him running through the half-harvested field and him with Beth Ann on the tree. Stephen stands in front of a mirror, his mouth open. He thumps his chest. He struggles to make a sound, then resignedly shakes his head. Another day, he plays with a transparent telephone. When he hears the door opening, he puts the receiver to his ear as if on a call.
Stephen. Speaking to someone on the phone?
The boy nods. Rosenstock watches as Stephen starts tapping the keys on the phone.
What is that, Morse code? Is that some kind of a joke? Wipe that smile off your face. No session today. Okay? And let me tell you something else, Stephen. You continue like this, you are going to be here a very long time. I've got to go. There are other patients who want my help. Excuse me for interrupting your conversation.
I've had it with you.
He walks out on a frustrated Stephen. Night. There's an outdoor party of young people. A bonfire blazes in the background. A car drives along the road towards the party and dips its lights. John keeps a wary eye on it.
Tain, that's the beer! Get out of here!
The kids scramble, leaving John alone. The sheriff and deputy get out of their car and stand by the open doors. They look across towards John, who stands defiantly facing them.
Hey, John. Hey, where you been?
Just cleaning grounds.
So, what's for dinner?
Where's John?
Well, I thought he was with you.
Oh, we've got to keep an eye on him.
Been gone all night.
You okay?
No, I'm not. I'm tired. Cook, housekeeper, laundress, secretary, boot polisher. There's food in the fridge when you're hungry to eat when you're done washing the dishes.
Hey,
I quit.
Hey, Liddy. I don't give a damn about the dinner. Just don't quit being my girl, okay?
They stand in the shadows of the house, and she rests her head on his shoulder. Later, Lydia's in the stable. She folds up a couple of blankets, and as she walks through the stable, she stops and looks up. Sitting on his bed in his room, Stephen looks at a photograph of his mother in his hands. He takes the photo up to his chest and presses it to himself as he sobs. Lydia stands staring into space, then continues with the blankets. Stephen continues to sign home to Rosenstock and wraps his arms round himself. Rosenstock shrugs and puts a hand behind his ear. Stephen stomps his foot and keeps pointing to himself. Rosenstock mimics him. Stephen hammers his fist on the desk and points to himself again.
Could you repeat that, Stephen, please?
Stephen screws up his face. A narrow smile appears on Rosenstock's face, and he moves towards the boy who puts his hand to his throat.
What did you say?
No.
It's the sweetest no I ever heard.
Stephen smiles, takes his hand from his throat, and slaps Rosenstock's hand in a gimme five. The phone rings in Jim's office.
I'm real estate. Yes, it is. Yes?
Jim turns, hearing the silence from Lydia.
What?
He spoke.
Stephen tries on Lacey's woolly hat.
That's cool.
It's far too big.
Not you. Definitely not you.
He bounces on her bed as she finds another.
About this one. Try it on.
He pulls it down over his ears and eyes.
Maybe for skiing in the Alps, but not for you. We have got to find you a hat. This might work.
She hands him a berry, which fits snugly over his curly fair hair.
Oh, righteous. Totally righteous.
The great big toothy smile on Lacey's face slowly disappears. She blinks and turns as if in a daze. She sits down on the edge of the bed beside him.
I hate everything.
Stephen shrugs his shoulders.
My family. They hate me.
Stephen hits his chest, points with his open hand and cuddles himself. A care worker.
Lacey, turn the music off. Come on, Stephen, it's time for bed.
Stephen looks dolefully up at Lacey as she switches off the music. He tosses her the berry and walks out.
Good night.
Lacey sighs and looks down at the berry. Lydia is up a stepladder trying to pin a welcome home banner to the porch. She loses grip of one end and it flutters down to the porch. She falls from the ladder and lies stomach down on the ground. At the local hospital...
Lydia has had a bleeding ulcer for some time now. Her condition's critical.
What are you saying?
She's developed what's called toxic megacolon. I'm gonna do some tests, and I'll know more next week. Okay, I'll call you.
Yeah.
At the institution, Stephen's sitting outside on a bench writing in his notepad when the two doctors, Rosenstock and Beckman, walk up behind him.
Hi, Stephen. Stephen. Can I sit down?
He moves along the seat to allow Rosenstock to sit.
I got some bad news for you.
He glances up at Susan. John's leaning on a wall at the hospital. Jamie and Stephen are also there outside Lydia's room. Stephen looks in to his mum and dad.
Mom, if you could really hear me, don't die. Please, don't die.
Stephen buries his face in his hands.
Okay, let's go. I'll do the back, James. You do the front. Stephen, John, do the porch. No arguments.
They're at home by the pickup, ready to paint.
Dad thinks if we paint the house, Mom's gonna get well. But he knows there's only one thing that'll make her happy. Stephen, just touch her, all right? Let her bring her back. Say something to her, anything. She's your mother.
Hey, lay off him.
No, this is his fault, right? All of it's your fault.
He doesn't like to get close.
Dad sold more land, you know? And now what? What, we're gonna lose our mother? For gosh sakes, just open your mouth and say something!
Look, he can't!
That's bull, okay? That's crap! No, what?
Stephen signs.
I promised you didn't have to say anything. No. Well, I'm going back on my word. Nothing. No letters, nothing. I'm cutting you off just like you cut Mom off, all right? Say something, for gosh sakes, just open your mouth or I swear I'll...
Jamie lets go of his little brother, who throws down the cloth he's carrying and pushes past John.
Hey.
He runs off over the field. John raises his arms in exasperation. Dusk. A soft pink suffuses the sky with the homestead in silhouette. Jim sits on the back porch with his face resting on his clasped hands. There's a faraway look in his eyes. He turns his head when his youngest son comes to sit beside him.
Hey, how are you? How you doing? We're a lot alike, aren't we? And I don't like talking either. Probably why I holler so much. I only care about two things. And family and this broken down old farm.
Stephen points to his father, then opens his hands, palms upwards. He mimes hammering.
Work? Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I spend all day working in a stinking office so that I can hang on to this and a few acres we got left.
Stephen repeatedly taps his chest with his clenched fist.
Your mom is hurting. I can't help her. She needs to hear your voice. Hmm? What do you say? Just go to her.
Jim goes to put an arm round the boy, but Stephen leaps to his feet and runs away, leaving his father sitting on the step, a forlorn figure. Back at the institution, Stephen saunters along a corridor. He stands in the open doorway of Lacey's room. A bold picture of a woman's face lies on her bed.
Stephen! Lacey's not there.
He meets Rosenstock on the stairs.
She's sick. They took her to the emergency room.
He signs to Rosenstock.
She tried to kill herself, Stephen. Sit down, sit down, sit down.
They both sit down on the stairs.
She has
a demon inside us, Stephen. No, not that kind of a demon. It's a loneliness. It's very hard for her to... The pain of it is... You know the music says she plays loud all day long? So she's trying to fight back her loneliness, fight back the demons. Oh, I know you're a good friend of ours. Friend. And in a couple of days, you can't see her now because she's too woozy, but in a couple of days when they bring her back to her room, you go in there and you tell her how much you care for her. It's gonna mean a lot to her. Don't worry, she's gonna be all right. She's not gonna die. But you'll understand, huh?
Yes. No.
Stevens with frozen stock.
What else? Yes, no, hi is very good, but it's not enough. We have to make faster progress. I got a new plan, Stephen. Every day, a new word, starting now.
Stephen thinks. Then with his two hands, he draws in the air the shape of a house with its roof, walls, and floor.
I can't hear you. Again. Where do you want to go?
Home.
Very good. Home.
Stephen smiles triumphantly. He walks into a room where Lacey's asleep in bed. Her wrists are bandaged. He goes up to the bed, flexes his fingers, and ever so gently touches her face. She stirs and opens her eyes. Lacey smiles, then looks down at her bandaged wrists. Lacey turns away and closes her eyes. Jamie stands on the front porch at home and looks out. John is sitting on the steps. There's snow on the ground.
Mom looks great.
Lydia walks up with Jim. She stops.
Well. Oh, well. How'd you manage?
Labor was cheap.
I'm so glad to be home.
Night. Jim walks out onto the porch to join Lydia. He's carrying a blue mug with a little cocktail umbrella in it.
Aloha.
So where'd you find this?
In the pantry.
Turning romantic on me, Jimmy?
Turn in whatever you want. Just turn in.
Lydia stretches up to her taller husband and kisses him fully on the lips.
We are who we are.
Oh, yeah.
And I like that.
She and Jim visit Dr. Rosenstock.
How many words so far?
Four. Yes, no. Hi, January of four.
That's a start.
Well, he was saying yes and no when he was a year old. He started making sounds again.
Jim, the kid's overwhelmed.
He's petrified. Right? This silence, this mutism, is something that he's lived with. He's comfortable. His whole identity is wrapped up in it. The thought of giving it up is frightening to him. But I think he's going to talk. He wants to talk, really. But it's going to take time.
Stephen passes Susan and a care worker on the stairs.
Hey, Stephen.
He stands in Rosenstock's doorway. His parents look round at him expectantly. Stephen looks at them both, then concentrates on his mother.
I can hear your thoughts no matter how far away you are.
He stares with unblinking eyes, his lips remain firmly clamped together. The coupe drives away from the institution. They arrive home. Beth Ann and John are there to meet them.
Can you talk?
Not a word.
He waves to an unsmiling Beth Ann, then signs to her, pointing to himself, making a cradling motion, then pointing to her. John walks inside. John is riding a grey out in the corral. Lydia, her heavy blue-checked lumber jacket on, watches him. Stephen, wearing a dark jacket and light trousers, comes out, carrying a single bloom.
Oh, look at you. Get her a flower.
He signs to Lydia.
Orchid. It's perfect. You gonna dance?
A pace away from her, Stephen shrugs his shoulders.
You remember when we used to dance? Do you remember when you were little? You put your feet on my feet? We danced all around the room? My little guy. I love you so much. You know, if I never hear your voice again, I always love you.
He blows her a kiss. She responds, and he mimes catching the kiss and placing it on his heart. He's at the school dance with Beth Ann, who wears his orchid. Another student walks up.
Stephen, how's it going?
He struggles to form a word, then gives up and skips playfully round Beth Ann. She walks away and takes a seat. He sits beside her.
Hello, Dan.
A girl student.
Do you want to dance, Stephen?
He points to Beth Ann.
Don't be dumb, Stephen. Go.
Maybe later. See ya.
Why'd we come to the dance if you were afraid to dance with anybody else? I don't know you.
He air draws a heart.
I know this person that I've made up in my head, and I like having people talk back to me, I guess.
He points to himself, his throat, then her.
No, you don't. Not really. I'm the one. I had to order our dance tickets because you couldn't phone. I have to talk for you, order your burgers, everything. Forget it. I can't anymore. Goodbye, Stephen.
She kisses him on the cheek, then rises and walks off through the dancing students. Night. He wheels his bicycle up to Grandma's house. She's sitting on her rocker on the porch. The record on the gramophone with its horn-shaped speaker still spins, though it's done. He tiptoes over to her. He tries to wake her by shaking her arm. He fails to do so and lets go of her arm, which flops to the side of the chair. He pulls open the door. In bed, Lydia answers the phone.
Hello? Hello?
Stephen runs outside, clutching the telephone. He picks up the arm of the gramophone and places it on the still-spinning record. He places the receiver in the horn.
Grant?
Family and friends gather at Grandma's funeral.
He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death,
Stevens with Dr. Rosenstock.
Gone wrong.
He's sitting curled up in a chair.
Beth Ann.
Stephen, Grandma's in heaven.
Gone wrong.
What's gone wrong?
Brain.
Stephen smacks his head with his hands.
Stephen, listen to me. Inside your head, there's a little man. And he delivers the words from your head to your vocal cords. And then you speak beautifully. When you decided to not speak anymore, he said, "Pooh, I don't have to do anything anymore. Stephen doesn't want to talk, so I'm free."
Fix.
No more writing. No more miming. Talking. only talking.
Stephen sits sulkily in the chair. Money is laid in front of the sheriff.
On me, Eli. Next time you catch those punks screwing my machinery, lock them up.
They're in a diner.
Hi, Mrs. Klein.
Hi, Brooklyn. How are you, honey?
Fine. I was wondering about Stephen.
Stephen talks, though.
For real?
Well, I'm not sure.
Say hi for me, okay?
I sure will, sweetie.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Talk to you. Yeah, cool.
The sheriff overhears, lights flashing his cars on the road.
Well, if the kid's talking, we have an eyewitness. I used to have to put screws to John. You check the school, I'll check the ravine. That's how he heads home.
John, a cigarette in his mouth, is standing at the creek where Josh died. He moves away. The sheriff pulls up by the ravine as John walks back up from the creek. He sees the sheriff as he gets out of the car. John ducks behind a tree and runs for it. The sheriff walks on. John's in a cell.
Good luck.
Real sorry about all this. This one was drinking again.
What happened to your face? What happened to his face?
Well, you know John. Tried to bust loose. Banged his head in the car window.
Is that what happened? The hell do you care?
You gotta watch that one, Jim. Real attracted to trouble.
The sheriff watches as they all leave. Later in the stable, John sits rubbing a saddle as his mother walks in behind him.
You love it, don't you?
What?
The farm.
It's okay.
I think you're gonna be the one who stays here, keeps it up. Got the spirit for it.
I can't.
Why not?
Because I ain't staying here.
Just because of Stephen?
No. No, it's not because of Stephen. You think everything's Stephen, 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 Stephen.
He storms out. Another session for Stephen.
This is by a composer named Schubert. Schubert. Listen to the music, Stephen. Listen how each note connects to the other, like words.
Stephen mimes playing piano.
Each one connects, like words in a sentence. Hooking notes together, putting words together. Stephen, try to say a simple sentence. What a beautiful day. Come on, pal. The sky is blue. Come on. How dreary
to be
somebody.
Jim's moving a new dresser into Stephen's room.
He's gonna love this.
Heck of a Christmas present.
He's had this old dresser since he was a baby.
Lydia opens a drawer.
Jim?
She finds newspaper cuttings.
Jim, look.
They refer to Josh's death. Jim takes a look. Dr. Rosenstock answers his phone.
Harvey Rosenstock. Hiya, Lydia. How you doing? Yeah. When did this happen? Right before he stopped speaking? I'll be out there tomorrow.
Stephen's reading in his single room.
Hi, Stephen. Oh, you're all packed. Great.
I just had a little talk with your mommy about a couple hours ago. She said something about a friend of yours named Josh Samuels. Something about some newspaper articles that you saved. Yeah, you know, it'll be okay. Don't worry about it.
Stephen shakes his head.
Stephen.
John.
You have a
I could have died in.
Mommy!
Steve, keep your mouth closed.
I can hear your thoughts.
John, Mommy!
Images of Stephen tossing and turning in bed, of the Grey and his mother racing from the burning stable, John racing after Stephen give way to Jamie and John tossing a Christmas tree onto the back of the pickup. Sheriff's car pulls up and he and his deputy get out. The sheriff swaggers over to John and Jamie.
What can I do for you, Eli?
You boys chopped that thing down?
No, it fell over all by itself.
John, get in the truck.
No.
You know I can't allow you to take it out of here.
This is our property.
Well, not anymore.
We've been doing this for 20 years, Eli. I mean, my father planted these trees.
I know that, son.
Look, Willie Burns bought our land. He didn't buy our trees, you stupid jerk.
Who are you calling a jerk?
John, get in the truck.
I don't think so. I think John and I should have ourselves a little chat.
No.
Eli, just let it go. I mean,
your brother seems to have a real problem with authority.
He's not your problem, right?
Well, I think he is. Now, you've been gone a little while, Junior. John and I have got ourselves a real relationship going, don't we, John? Get in the car, John. I'll drive you home. Go ahead.
His face taut, John strides past the sheriff and over to his car.
Now the deputy will ride with you. You can go ahead and keep the tree. I don't want to be the one to spoil your Christmas.
The sheriff walks back to his car. A car turns onto the track up to the house, past the barn and silo, and stops in the yard. Jim and Lydia come out to meet Dr. Rosenstock and Stephen.
Hi, Jim. Did he tell you anything?
The doctor shakes his head. Snow is falling.
He's hiding something. Stephen, did you see something? Just a nod, yes or no?
Jim.
Do you know anything about Josh's death?
Jim, it's not the way...
Jim.
Answer me now!
Stephen struggles free.
Mr. Klein.
The sheriff's car pulls up with the pickup right behind it.
Stephen, come on. You all right, pal?
Jim walks towards the sheriff as John and he get out. Lydia, Stephen and the doctor watch from the porch. The sheriff spots Stephen.
Welcome home, Stephen.
Eli, is this social or are you just bringing me more trouble?
Dad, John didn't do anything wrong.
John glares at Stephen, who shakes his head.
This is the last Christmas, Jim. Willie's not as generous as you were with his trees.
The sheriff goes. Lydia has the newspaper cuttings.
Stephen? What is this?
Shut up.
Look, you know anything about that dead boy, you damn well better tell me about
Stephen,
it.
Stephen, let's go inside.
Stephen, you stay where you are! You keep out of this, I can talk to my own son.
Now, what's going on?
John shrugs off his father's hand grasping his arm and stares at Jim defiantly.
John, what's going on?
John's lips quiver and he glances across at the sheriff's car which hasn't moved.
What?
Stephen looks up anxiously at his mother and Dr. Rosenstock.
Me and Josh. We were up at old Willie's barn. The sheriff.
What? What?
I hid behind the silo. But Josh, he was yelling for me.
John! John!
Sheriff hit him with his club.
An image of the sheriff hitting Josh. Everyone stares at John in shock. Then they turn as they see the sheriff's car reverse and move away back down the track.
Josh tried to get away. He was screaming for me. But I was hiding. I'm so scared, Cat.
The sheriff dragging the limp Josh across the ground.
Josh looked dead. The sheriff picked him up. Threw him in the river.
Stephen covers his ears, the sheriff standing by the body.
John?
John hiding behind a tree. Jim stares at his weeping middle son.
Later, Stephen. Stephen saw Josh's body in the river.
A hand picking up Stephen's red baseball cap.
The sheriff said that he'd do the same to me. What he did to Josh if I talked.
So you protected your brother?
I had to keep Stephen from talking. I didn't know what to do to keep us safe.
Should have been my job. Sorry.
I'm afraid you wouldn't believe me, Dad.
Jim hugs John and kisses his head. Stephen stands alone by the field where he ran and jumped and spun around, his back to the house. Lydia walks down the steps, stops, then walks over to him. Dr. Rosenstock watches for a moment, then moves off the porch. Lydia sidles up beside her youngest son and stands beside him. Stephen turns to Lydia and touches her face with his gloved hand.
Mom, I always loved you. Always.
He touches her face again, then puts both his arms round her. She hugs him gently. They stand wrapped around each other as the snow falls. White letters on a black background. Sheriff Eli Haynes was soon indicted and found guilty of misuse of power, abuse, and second-degree murder. Stephen Klein has since dedicated his studies to teaching the deaf. ITFC audio description by James O'Hara.